You're listening to Shift in Action, a program of wisdom media and spirited exchange offered through the Institute of Noetic Sciences. For more information, visit www.shiftinaction.com.
Intrinsically, man then has no capacity to discern truth from falsehood. It isn't man, it's the mind. The mind has no capacity. It has no mechanism. It goes with probability, reasonableness, persuasiveness. And so the politicians try to persuade us this way and try to persuade us that way. Huh? The intellectuals get out there with mechanistic reductionism and tell you if you can't measure it, weigh it, it's not real, and all kinds of bizarre thoughts. Bizarre thoughts. Oh, Lord, save the mechanistic reductionists. Amen. I put a good word in for you, so... It will not go as badly as you think when you get there. You know, the mechanistic reductionist, the scientific paradigm. So today we're going to have to transcend the Newtonian paradigm. Because the Newtonian paradigm ends up at 499. The Newtonian paradigm of reality calibrates up to 499. Spirituality, as we are familiar with it, and really starts are in the 500s. Love is 500. So let's go over the calibrated scale of consciousness then and see how this all works. You see, having discovered that kinesiology was a means of discerning truth, then these are classic philosophic levels, classic in psychoanalysis. My analyst was from Columbia Psychoanalytic. These are the emergency emotions. These are the welfare emotions. And many Wilbur and many others, the perennial philosophy, these are the classic levels of human nature. No? So if we began to calibrate them, we discovered that the numbers were astronomical, and therefore, to make them workable, we used the logarithm. And we discovered on a scale of 1 to 1,000. So we said on a scale of 1 to 1,000, what was the highest level of consciousness that's ever walked this planet? And we got the great avatars, Jesus Christ, Krishna, the Buddha, and the great teachers of the Vedas. The Rig Veda calibrates close to 1,000. The ancient wisdom of the enlightened masters was then the highest calibrations. Then we discovered if it on 1 to 1,000, what's the level of truth? And that came out to be 200. Anything over 200 makes you go strong. Under 200 is false and makes you go weak. So we had an instantly available means of discerning truth from falsehood, which we've used to solve the mysteries of the ages and keep to ourselves. No, we share it with the public in our books and lectures. And we use it to find missing articles, like where did I lose my passport in Korea, and we got it on the back of the bathroom door. Oh, okay. So to locate your missing passport in a foreign country is not a pleasant experience, folks. You've ever tried. You find out, spend a couple of months in the local jail talking your way out. All right, so here was a useful scale. It you know, when I saw the implication of it, I really didn't know what to do about it for some years. I didn't know to what degree to even share it. Because at that time I thought anybody could do this, and I thought of all the nefarious people out there. When we see the distribution of levels of consciousness in mankind, you'll see why I hesitated to even share it with the world. I thought of all the nefarious uses it could be put to. Then it turned out that the only people who can do the kinesiologic test and get truthful answers themselves have to be over 200. The person's doing the test, the two of you, if you're doing the kinesiology, the two of you, you both have to be over 200, and the intention of the question has to be integrous. How can I best, you know, beat out my competitor in business? You won't get a correct answer. How can I best serve God and serve the world? How can I best serve all of us, including ourselves? You'll get an answer. Okay, so selfishness then rules you out. Selfishness puts you down below 200. Therefore, when people go to calibrate their own level of consciousness, I advise them not to do it because you can't be detached and objective. You'd have to be beyond sainthood, you know, to not have a vested interest in knowing what is your own level of consciousness. So I'll tell you a secret way to find it out anyway. You see, the only reason you want to know it is, what is the implications for your own destiny? You don't really care where it is now, but you want to know, you know, what is the implication of that? So the only reason people are here today is because they're destined for enlightenment. Nobody else would be here, you see. And the old paradigm, the Newtonian paradigm, you think what you are today is the product, you're the product of your past. You're here because the past has pushed you here. That is an old-fashioned, forget it. No. In the new paradigm, which is also describable in quantum mechanics, it's the future that's pulling you to be where you are. Yeah, the future and the past, because your future's already happened, that the present is here as your future here now, which just passed by. And therefore, your future is why you're here. And if you weren't destined to be enlightened, there'd be nobody would be here. If you weren't interested in playing golf, you wouldn't be taking golf classes, right? Let's see if what we said is so. What I just said is a fact. These people are all destined for enlightenment. Yeah, who else but people destined for enlightenment would be a class on how to become enlightened? It's rather obvious, isn't it? You're not being propelled by the past, although evolutionary-wise, you become that which manifests as what you are at the moment. So we found that then you could discern truth from falsehood. If you can tell the truth from falsehood about anything anywhere in time, that's mind-boggling. In fact, the mentor who reviewed the, whatchamacallit, I did on it for a PhD, went into such paradigm shock, he left and went to Europe for 2 weeks just to recover from it. He said, I got what you were saying. Consequently, I walked away from everything and went to Europe to think about it for 2 weeks. All right, so I myself was somewhat bedazzled by it. And therefore, we tested it out endlessly. Many people in the country were doing kinesiology back in the 70s, and so everything we're talking about today has been tested out by tens of thousands of people in all different kinds of countries. We did it in Korea, we did it in South America, we've done it all over the world, all across Europe, millions of audiences. And it's pretty useful. It's pragmatically useful. So everything above 200 then makes you go strong. Everything below 200 makes you go weak. And this will have amazing applications, as we'll see later on. We're going to apply it to the entire world and see what it reveals about the world, because this is the global new thinking. And therefore, we're interested, how does this apply to the whole world, and not just to ourselves personally? So you see the levels here then. They have to do with your how you understand God, you see? So you see all kinds of different ways of understanding God. You know, from the great punisher, God who's denying, God who's dead, you see the atheist, God who's helpful, God who does you favors, and there's all kinds of gods out there. The gods over time have evolved the same as man's consciousness, curiously. The Incas and the Mayans and those had the concepts of God were quite different. They sacrificed young maidens to appease them. So the concepts of God are then pretty much a projection of one's level of consciousness. So people whose consciousness is down in the lower range, let's say if a new avatar appeared on the planet and told them about the new god, Dorg, see? It was revealed to him that Dorg is the god of galaxies, and your god, you people are worshiping, is only the god of your planet. I come to speak to you of Dorg. Now, you people pray like this, but when you worship Dorg, you go like this, because Dorg has reverse time, and you people are living in reverse time, and I'm living in straight time. And so we tell them about the great god Dorg, who will save you, and who is worshipped this way. Well, all these people down here hear about Dorg, and now they kill anybody who doesn't believe in Dorg. In other words, people down here are going to use destructiveness no matter what you give them. If you give them gunpowder, you're not going to make 4th of July fireworks. They're going to make gunpowder and kill people. You understand? So all of it then is a function of the level of consciousness. And the people, then there's the anti-Dorg people who live on their store. No Dorgs or cats allowed. Ha 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 So that's today's world. People are bombing the Dorg people. The Dorg people are killing those people. And this way you get to heaven is I blow you people up. And, oh, wow. You see, that's coming out of a field of consciousness. Can I fault those people for thinking that way? No. A hardware of consciousness is innocent. It'll believe any hardware. And so the great propagandists, of whom Joseph Goebbels was the world's master, you know, were the software experts. Software experts. All right. They slipped it under the guise of virtue. So here is shame and guilt and apathy. You see the vision of God. You see this view of oneself. Here's your view of who you are. Hopeless, evil, miserable. Now, I'll give you a little... The way to God is through joy, happiness, humor, compassion. Not through misery, suffering, wallowing in masochistic, self-punitive indulgences. I see guilt as a self-indulgence. Get off it. It's egocentricity. Guilt, martyrdom, wallowing in regret. It's self-indulgence. Get off it. The way to God is through the reality of God, which is the joy of the presence of God as the source and the presence of your existence in this moment. The source of joy is the awareness of God as the source of one's existence continuously at every moment. So, these people live in fear. The world lives in fear. You see, the view of oneself here. It's nice to have a benign view of yourself, that you're doing the best you can. Everybody who agrees they're doing the best they can right now, raise your hand. Anybody who thinks they're not doing the best they can, come up here and be punished. Every human, from moment to moment, is always doing the best they can. You understand that? Everyone is only being what they can be at any given moment. Nothing else is possible except as a hypothetical mentation. The fact that you made it into a hypothetical mentation doesn't mean it's a reality. So the secret of how the mind creates an illusion then is simply, you take a yardstick like this, and you say, now, this is the long end, and this is the short end. Now you move your point of observation. Whoop. No, this is the long end. This is the short end. Oop. No, this is the long end. This is the short end. You can see that measurement is a fact, is something that happens. It's a mentation. It's not a reality. And what you see that the mind and the intellect and the ego do is create a mentation and then project it into the world and believe that it exists in the world, such as the principle of causality. There's nothing in the world has the capacity to cause anything. The infinite presence of God is the source of all. But even God doesn't cause anything. The magnetic field doesn't cause anybody to do anything. Everything and everybody just lines up in the field according to who they are. What defines phenomena is existence, what you are. Change the polarity, change the charge, and you'll be in a different position in the universe. All right, so there we have the levels all going all the way up. Neutrality is a nice place. Here, courage is a big critical one. These are the logs of the numbers. These are the emotions that go with it, which have interesting applications to psychology and psychotherapy and psychoanalysis. And this is the process going on in consciousness itself. And inflation is the one that's of danger to our society. It's the ego inflation of the megalomaniac. If you track the consciousness level of Napoleon or Adolf Hitler, Napoleon was at like 450 or so, very brilliant tactician, brilliant at mathematics in many fields, probably a walking genius, intellectually a genius. And then suddenly, when he crowns himself emperor, crowns himself emperor, the Pope always crowned the heads of Europe, but Napoleon crowned himself. In that instant, his calibrated level went from like 460 to 180 or something. You see, the same thing happened with Milosevic, Stalin, Hitler. I think Hitler in the beginning was merely a politician, and then the megalomania hits them. And when the megalomania hits them, mankind is not aware that's happened. And mankind, who was benefited by Hitler in the beginning, he got the Autobahn, benefited by Napoleon. We just came back from Europe, and Napoleon's mark is still all well over Europe. And then suddenly they crash, and suddenly the monster emerges. And what was the benefactor is now the great killer of society. And mankind never knows when that happened. Mankind never knows when that happened. So we've needed a compass. Without a compass, the bottom of the oceans is littered with vessels and the bodies of thousands and tens of thousands of sailors. With no compass, mankind had no way to traverse the sea of life. So let's go to the next slide. Next slide. Mankind's upside down. Mankind's backwards. Gord's going to get you if you don't straighten it out. Oh, yeah. Dorg is going to get you. Oh, right. She's got it straight. If you look at the distribution, you see, compassion comes out. You can't have an artificial compassion because we're all going to have parade cards saying compassion and love and peace. Compassion comes out of actually understanding the reality behind existence. Once you understand it, compassion is automatic. You can't help but be compassionate because you see the truth of what goes on. The truth of what goes on, you see, is that 87... No, what does that say? Well, roughly 80% of the world's population calibrates below 200. 80% of the world's population, roughly 80%. It used to be 85%, now it's down to 78% or so. So the consciousness level of mankind is rising. The consciousness level of mankind, if you calibrate it from the beginning of time, as I say, through Neanderthal man, Cro-Magnon man, on through the hominids, up through Homo erectus, built-down man, etc., modern man, consciousness level of all of mankind at the time of the birth of the Buddha was 90. The consciousness level of all of mankind, which is beyond Neanderthal. Neanderthal was 75. The time of Buddha was 90. However, in the world in which the consciousness level of the world was 90, there were very advanced gurus who lived in India and whose truth has been known for 10,000 years. The Rig Veda records the awareness of the realized mystic, because throughout time the mystic has transcended the level of consciousness of all of mankind, and they've become the avatars and the teachers. At the time of the birth of Jesus Christ, the consciousness level of mankind was at 100. All right, at the time of Buddha it was 90, at the time of Jesus Christ it's 100. So interpreting the words of the great masters, you have to understand who they were talking to. The masters were talking to people with a consciousness level of 100, which adds a certain facet of understanding to the words that are spoken. The difficulty with understanding the words of great spiritual teachers is several-fold. One is that the listeners themselves are not enlightened and tend to misconstrue them, just like the worshippers of Gord. Gord. They weren't understood. The other thing that was profoundly missing, and only struck us only recently, is that they're missing the nuances and the gestures. They're missing that which gave the words the meaning that was given to them. So if you quote everything verbatim that I'm saying right now, would it make much sense? 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 The fact that the teacher is demonstrating non-verbally a parody of the illusions of the ego, so that you pick up the disparity unconsciously, is not something you can put in, you know. So if you sit there with a notebook and says, he said, that's why a great deal of misunderstanding and argument, because you're missing the gestures, the nuances, the word, you're missing the context in which it was said. You know, how things express themselves to an erudite audience such as this is different than they're going to express themselves to a different kind of audience. Huh? As I said, back many years ago, suddenly in confrontation with, it was preceded by going to the depths of hell, which I didn't get into. Anyway, in the quest for truth, one went from this being went from being devout and religious to being an atheist, and then a hopeless searching for truth, and ended up in great depths of despair, and explored the lower regions of hell, which are worse than one can imagine, and then came out of that state. The lower regions of hell are beyond all hope, ever. Ever, ever, ever. In fact, as one descends into the lower regions, they become timeless, just like the higher regions. The lower regions are beyond all time. And so for eons, one confronts the meaning of foreverness, of hopelessness and despair forever. And in that state, the atheist, at the time I was a tense atheist, out of the mind of the atheist arose a prayer. If there is a God, I ask him to help me. I didn't hold my breath because I was an atheist. And then everything was oblivion. Then when consciousness returned, I don't know, a day later or when, there was such a profound alteration, it can't really be spoken of even to this day. The revelation of all that exists, the oneness of God presents itself as all of existence. And the mind became silent, it was stunned into absolute silence, and it is silent to this moment. At this moment, the mind is silent, doesn't say anything. The speakingness happens of its own as a consequence of the interaction of the audience and this energy here. The mind has been silent for ever since. How to function in a world then was something of a dilemma until I left it. People say to this day, what are you thinking about? And I have to make up something to make them happy. I'm not thinking about anything. It must be something you want. I make up something, because if you don't tell them there's something you want, they are frustrated. Socks. I need socks. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to where we were. All right, we're going to take a break at 10:30. Is that good? All right. Nobody's been thinking so far, I hope, right? I'll do all the thinking. The problem then that we face then, if we talk about peace in this world or the hope of peace in this world, you can see evolution has been extremely slow, millions and millions of years. So Jesus Christ comes on the planet, the consciousness level of man is 100. Over the centuries, the consciousness level eventually went up to 190, and it stayed at 190 all through the centuries, 1200s, 1300s, 1400s, 1800s, 1900. When I was born, the conscious level of mankind was 190, I said. Did I say 190? Yes, that's where it was. All through World War II, all through, the consciousness level of mankind stayed at 190, which is below the level of integrity. Here's the level of integrity here, and the consciousness level of mankind was here. Suddenly in the late 1980s, all of a sudden, for no reason apparent, at about the time of the, whatchamacallit?
Harmonic
convergence. Yeah, about timing, but not caused by. It suddenly jumped to 207. 207 is an entirely different ball game from 190. First of all, because they're logarithmic, 190 to 207 is a huge jump. But the quality, see, because consciousness indicates a shift of quality. As consciousness calibrated levels proceed, the quality changes. The quality of life at 207 is totally different than the quality of life at 190. the world I grew up in, the paradigm of reality was success. Go to college, get a college education, be a success, have a new car. So mankind was below the level of integrity throughout all of history. Okay, so let's just jump then to the next slide. And then the next slide. So then consciousness level went up. So this is how to, we're going to get to that after the break. How to transcend the ego. You know, we said that the mind tends to deal in positionalities of right and wrong, good and evil, up and down, here and there. The animal sort of did that. The animal has to know where it is in space. There has to be a me here and a piece of food there, and he has to estimate the speed, the distance, the amount of strength. And so that's the way, pretty much the way the ego functions. It's dualistic in nature. It's dualistic in nature. All right. So it's necessary for a group like this to transcend the limitations of the ego. We use the 400s as a springboard to transcend them. We see that the intellect is of great value to the world. The benefits of science and medicine. Nobody died. All the, you know, when I started in medicine, we had whole hospitals. I was in charge of a hospital where everybody was dying of various diseases, which you don't even have anymore. All the diseases they were dying of don't even exist anymore. Yeah, they came in paralyzed with polio and all kinds of terrible diseases. So the benefits of the 400s have been tremendous. So we respect the intellect. It has been the great benefactor of society. The great benefactor. So as the consciousness level goes up, you see, we become more and more beneficial to the world around us. And certainly the 400s have been, the world of science has really transformed our life from sickness and suffering and misery to relatively painless surgery, childbirth, and recovery from many ailments. Huh? All right. I don't know if we're going to transcend the ego before we take a break or after. Well, we'll give you a hint. Yeah. So, all right. The ego then deals in dualities, good and bad. You know, this whole conference is to, you know, support the good and whatchamacallit. So we get into goodness and badness. So the mind becomes dualistic. There's a here and a there. There's the short end of the ruler and the long end of the ruler. And of course, you see in reality, there's neither a short or a long end, but we project that onto the world and assume that that's real. So here we'll take hot and cold. Certainly everybody will say, well, hot and cold are opposites of each other, opposites. And two different things. On the other hand, when you look at it, you see there are not two variables, there's only one. The one variable is heat is either present or not. So here we see lots of heat, here we see less heat. Only one variable, heat. There's not two variables, heat versus cold. There's no heat versus cold. Heat is present to varying degrees. And linguistically we say hot or cold, but that's only a convenience. And it doesn't exist as an independent reality. We can do the same thing with value, you see, and desirability. So value is based on desirability. If you want to, if you have an old car and all your friends have a new car, it's not, it's awful. If it's 40 years later, an old car is now worth $75,000 and now it's precious. 29 Mile A Ford when we went to school, you know, was a shame, but now it's precious. And the last one I priced was like $16,000 or something. So whether we desire a thing or not makes it all these different descriptive terms. Let's go to the next level. Huh? All right, so two more examples then, just so that we make this very very clear. There's reality upside down. No, there's reality right side up. Okay. Goodness and badness. This is the world of the politician, the vilifiers, who, because they represent vanilla, hate you, you must hate chocolate. So here you see goodness and the presence of goodness, desirability. So from a view, certain viewpoint, a thing is either good, bad, wicked, or very good. Right? Very good. We either have a parade or we assassinate them, depending on how we look at them. Huh? But the reality hasn't changed. You can see This is how we are looking at it. So we're projecting our values on the world, and we assume that these now have an independent existence. Let's take one that makes it very, very clear and obvious. Light versus dark. You see, light versus dark. Like we said, vanilla versus chocolate. Light versus dark. There is no such thing as light versus dark. Light is either present or it is not present. And it's present to varying degrees, from brilliant to not so bright, to dim, dusky. And when it's all, when there's none available, we call it pitch black. Yeah? They're not opposites. So all you're ever measuring is one variable, and the one variable itself is an arbitrary selection of the intellect. See? The purpose of all these lectures is we're trying to jump from the supposed objective, which is not possible to exist, to the reality of the subjective, where everything exists. Reality, spiritual reality, cannot be understood, comprehended, much less experienced, from supposed scientific objectivity. The intellect is nothing but a tool, and science is a tool, one for which we are extremely grateful. We don't put down the intellect, we prize it, because if it weren't for the intellect, none of us would be here now. Alright, so that shows us the secret of how to transcend duality, to see that it is an arbitrary mentation. Can we go to the next? And then we're going to take a break. We're going to tell you some secrets of the mind that have never been known in the history of mankind, but not till after the break. Lights out. The word perceived. The perceived assassin, the perceived shooter, the perceived gunman, the perceived crime. More sophisticated, realizing the limitations of the human intellect. When you really understand the nature of mankind, the nature of the intellect, and the evolution of consciousness as it evolved as mankind over the centuries, you end up with a profound humility. So the safeguard from and being imprisoned by the intellect is humility. That the intellect is only capable of certain tasks within a certain domain. Beyond that, it's useless. The intellect is serviceable, but the elucidation of truth is limited by the limitation of the tool. So you see, the intellect then is a tool, extremely useful within a certain range. The intellect can put you on the right course, but then you have to transcend the intellect, because the intellect is its own limitation. The intellect is intrinsically limited. So, those who are newly born to the capacity to think often get carried away with it and make official pronouncements. They either get jobs with the government, yeah, which specializes in sloppy science. As the intellect becomes more mature, the more mature intellect then develops wisdom and begins to realize its own limitations. The study of philosophy, the great books of the Western world, the greatest thinkers, philosophy takes you to endless riddles, and you begin to realize that the intellect is merely a self-reifying system. What you end up with is a definition of what you've already defined by your statement. It becomes a self-reifying tautology. It is what you say it is by the definition of what you've asked. The question has already limited the possible answer. Therefore, you realize there's no answer to the question why. And when we get to the question and answer session, no why will be answered. I'll give you the secret to that, which I knew when I was 7 years old. My family liked nonsense doggerel, you know. Why is a whirling mouse? Because the more it spins and then some. There, intrinsically, you have the limitations. A very extremely sophisticated little piece of doggerel, which already tells you the nonsensical nature of the question of why and the futility of intellectualism for its own sake, which becomes primarily an ego gratification. All why answers end up however you wish it to be. So philosophy then takes you to a predicament, or that I remember in my own adolescence, is this as far as it can take you? The great minds of the entire world is as far as they've gotten, right? And you end up in philosophy, you end up in epistemology. You have to transcend philosophy through metaphysics. You end up really with problem in epistemology. And how does man know anything? Epistemology, the science of knowing, because how do you know that you know anything? That takes you to gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, and it takes you out of the intellectual paradigm, and most importantly, it takes you from the supposedly objective to the subjective, and the realization that all reality is knowable only by virtue of the subjective. And how does the subjective exist? It exists as consciousness itself, or consciousness, awareness. And that takes you to the source of consciousness, awareness. So the source of knowingness is the presence of divinity within you, which was the argument of the Gnostics, G-N-O-S-T-I-C-S, and resulted in many mystics being burned at the stakes. So I'm very glad I wasn't born in the 1400s. Because the revelation of the truth of the existence of God shines forth as a stunning, an overwhelming obviousness. It's obvious. It's like the whole world turns into technicolor and 3D and you were seeing it in black and white. You know? Stunning. And the mind becomes silent. It finally realizes what it is and shuts up. It doesn't have the audacity to think. That's really the best expression. It would be so presumptuous and audacious and disrespectful for it to think. Therefore, to realize the presence of God requires no thinkingness whatsoever. In an instant, the mind is transcended. It takes one-tenth of a second between the obvious reality, or obvious to the mystic at least, and the mind. Experience is about it's one-ten-thousandth of a second behind the revelation of reality. The revelation of God as all of existence is then screened by the ego, which is extremely fast, 1/10,000th of a second. It interprets it all. And so what you're getting is the tape monitor and not the origination of the program. You're not hearing the music. You're hearing the taping of the music as it's played back 1/10,000th of a second. That's very frustrating. You run faster and faster to catch up to that 1/10,000th of a second. But as you do, it runs ahead of you 1/10,000th of a second. That's the 1/10,000th of a second that the Buddha spoke of as the space between two words, two thoughts. He wasn't quite correct. Which he agrees now. I've told him. I said, Buddha, it's before the thought, not between the thought. He said, Dave, you're right. So, to explain how the Buddha and I settled this, we'll have the next slide. You see, because all of reality exists outside of time. Outside of time. I'm not talking about temporal time at all. Reality is instantly knowable now. If everyone has ever known it, who is still, and therefore it still is. Yeah. All right. Today we're going to transcend the mind because it's a big nuisance. The body is also a nuisance. Why people insist on hanging on to it is beyond me. It's always in your way. No matter what you do, the body is always like, you know what I mean, bumping into things. When reality presented itself in such a stunning presentation that the mind was became silent, at that moment one transcends duality. And then the body is experienced as autonomous. As you can see, the body is like a pet. It's like a friend. It's like a handy doll, without which people wouldn't be able to see or hear you and would think you're a spook, probably. This is a you. They call it you. There's no one there, but that would frighten them, so you don't tell them that. But as you can see, the body goes about by itself spontaneously with no help from anything. Nobody's telling it what to do. It does what it does all by itself, which is the fact with your body. The only difference is 1/10,000th of a second before it does that, you think there's a you that's making it do that. There is no you making it do what it's doing. If we eliminate the you, everybody's body is going to go right on doing just what it's doing now, because it's at the effect of the field, you see? You're a particle in the field, and the field is deciding what your body's doing from instant to instant. And you think there's a you causing it to do that. There is no you causing it to do that. It's doing it all by itself. Which is a lot more fun to have a body when you see it that way. It's a source of entertainment. I mean, it's always doing something funny. I watch it and you see it, look at it in the mirror, it's hysterical. It's always doing something very funny. So, all right, the good news. We've had lots of good news today. We've got more good news. The mind, which you worry about how you're going to transcend it and ever become enlightened, is already 98% silent. It might even be 99%. Let's see. It might have gotten more silent when we weren't looking. The mind is over 98% of the mind is silent. 98.5, 98.8. Boy, oh boy, our work is 98.8% of the body, of the mind is silent. Only 1.2% of your mind is working. We're not talking about the physiologic brain. Forget the brain. That's a great limitation. None of what we're talking about has anything to do with the brain. The brain is just a receiving instrument. Without mind, it would have nothing to do and wouldn't even exist. So, 98% of the mind is silent. If 98% of the mind wasn't silent, you wouldn't even know what you're thinking. It's because of the silence of the forest that you can hear the bird. It's because of the silence. So the forest is 99.9% silent. 1% birdie. Because you listen to the 1%, you think this is the woods is noisy. No, you're focusing on the 1%. So the mind is like a giant stadium, big football stadium. Everybody's gone home. You're the only person in the stadium. Over in the corner, there's a little black and white 4x5 inch TV set, and you get focused on that. You think the whole stadium, boy, this is a noisy stadium. You think your mind is noisy. It's focused on the 1%. All right. So 98% of your mind is merely the presence of the field, completely silent, poised and ready to do its little 1% function, which you then focus on and think is me. It isn't that the mind is the obstruction to enlightenment, it's identification with the working of the mind as me. Huh? Thinking that it's who I am. Right this moment, everybody's mind here is silent. You can witness that very easily if I tell you where to look. If I tell you where to look, you'll see that the mind is silent. I don't know if you can see this blackboard here, this whiteboard rather. All right, let's say
Dog chases cat up tree.